Hey everyone, welcome back to another Barnes Bullet Points podcast. I'm Dale Evans, your host. We are on episode 4, right? Episode 4. Pretty exciting, coming off the long weekend of July 4th. Everybody had fun, I hope so.
Yeah, good break.
Good break, yeah. Do some camping, do some scouting.
Yeah, yeah, did both. I went scouting for elk and only found deer. And yeah, did some camping with the goats and fishing. It was a good break.
Nice.
Yeah.
Craig?
Yeah, we did a little bit of everything. I tried to shove in everything we could. We went and took the dirt bikes out, did some single track in the mountains a few different days, rode some mountain bikes, went fishing, took the side-by-side out with the family, worked on a bunch of projects around the house.
Nice. Sounds like a action-packed week and weekend.
It was.
Nice. We didn't do too much. We went to a little parade and then just kind of hung out around the house and, you know, having little kids, right? They can't really stay up for fireworks or anything like that. So, yeah, it was good. It was nice to have a nice long weekend. But we're back into it now. It's Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk ammo families today. I think that it makes a lot of sense. In episode 2, we talked about the bullet families of Barnes. But now that we've really kind of, I don't want to say transitioned into an ammo company, but I mean, ammo is really kind of taken off for us, I guess you could say. It makes a lot of sense to go over all the different things that we have available here at Barnes. You know, I think everybody knows about our Vortex stuff, right? Because that's kind of been our bread and butter for, 20 years, give or take.
Yeah, when, was it 2011?
Yeah.
We did ammo?
2011 is when okay. Vortex launched.
Okay, so 14 years,
it's give been or a minute. Take,
right? Yeah, and that's what got me into shooting Barnes way back then, right? Was I was able to pick it up off the shelf at Dick's Sporting Goods or wherever that it was, right? Bass Pro. So yeah, we talked about, or we could talk about that, but I would like to talk about kind of the wide array of everything that we have and then kind of hone in on some of our maybe unknowns, if you want to call it that, right? Like some of those ones that were really designed specifically for certain purposes. As well as some of our kind of newer things that, again, maybe people aren't as aware of. Yeah, and then just kind of take it from there. So, yeah, I would say let's let Greg kind of go over a large overview since you have probably the most hands-on experience of any of us of developing a lot of these.
Okay. Yeah, so starting with Vortex. Like you mentioned, Vortex is the main ammunition line. That was what got Barnes into loaded ammo. Vortex rifle is what it's called. That's basically hunting ammunition. You know, like we talked, it features the TTSX bullet. There are a few TSXs and LRXs, but the majority of them are TTSX.
Yeah.
With Vortex rifle, kind of the split off from there, we have the Vortex LR, which is the long range. You know, those are all LRXs.
Yeah.
So a few of the offerings, a little more niche cartridge type loads. But Vortex Safari, that's another one that was there with the Vortex launch. Gets us into, obviously, the 375 H&H, some of the big bore stuff, 458 Win Mag, 470 Nitro,
and
others. And those are loaded with a solid, the Barnes banded solid, as well as a matching weight TSX.
Okay.
A newer offering in the Vortex line is the Vortex Reduced Recoil.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that more specific later on. Pretty neat offering where we have purpose-built, you know, cartridge bullet selection with optimized projectiles to function at lower velocity.
Right.
Where you can have, you know, whether it's a recoil-sensitive shooter, somebody that wants to be able to shoot maybe a Magnum, but they don't need Magnum performance, but they want to use that gun, those kind of things.
So, yeah.
And then obviously we have the Pioneer line, which is optimized for lever gun and revolvers. And those have both the Barnes original as well as some TSX flat nose offerings and XPBs. On the handgun side, we have the TAC-X PD, personal defense ammunition.
Yeah.
You know, 9s, 380s, 40s, 45s, 357, you know, concealed carry, home defense type offerings.
Mm-hmm.
We also have precision match line, which is the match burner. You know, these are jacketed lead core, you know, match grade accuracy, high BC. Good offering for guy going to the range, target shooting, you know, whether it's just plinking or shooting an NRL hunter match or right. PRS. Guys wanting to do anything long range, shooting still, paper, those kind of things.
Yeah.
And we also have the JHP rifle, which is more of our kind of do all jacketed lead core.
Right.
A little bit lower price point, still premium ammo.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about plinking and stuff with like precision match, but that's where I really look at like that center fire rifle stuff is what to me is the plinking, right? Because we have 308, 223, like that type of stuff. Yeah,
300
right?
blackout.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. 55 grain JHP and 223.
Right.
What else did we have? Did I cover them all? Let me think.
Harvest.
And then the new offering, the Harvest,
yeah.
Which is the Barnes Harvest line, specifically looking at whitetail and other thin skin game, and that features the Sierra TGK projectile. So
yeah, and then I guess we could kind of go into Shot Shell a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because we relaunched that.
Yeah, Vortex Shot Shell, really popular offering, features the tipped expander slug, great option for those hunting with slug guns, whitetail, hogs,
right.
And then we also have the defense buckshot
right.
offerings as well in Shot Shell.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess let's kind of jump back to Vortex real quick.
I think before we go into Vortex, I think it kind of as a overall, we should explain why Barnes is different from other manufacturers as far as our loading practices and some of the things we do here to make this premium ammunition. And that doesn't apply to just Vortex, it's really everything.
Okay.
So if we can go into that and then dive into specific product lines.
Go for it.
These are loaded at Barnes, at pretty dang rigorous quality control when they're down loading on the ammunition equipment down there. They do a lot of quality checks in terms of overall lengths, powder weight, any variation at the start of every run, and then throughout the run we'll test pressure, velocity, accuracy. So we use SAMI test barrels and conformal pressure transducers to make sure it's consistent every time. We have a awesome facility here, great equipment in Greg's area. We have a 300 yard underground tunnel that we shoot into. And then, we have our Ayler equipment that can measure accuracy out to that 300 yards and has the acoustic microphones.
Right.
And we have just really good capability here to keep everything consistent. That ensures we have consistent muzzle velocities from lot to lot, really minimize the velocity variation where possible. We try to use temperature stable propellants.
Right.
We can test all that in our hot and cold chambers. And that's really what makes Barnes special and premium.
Right.
And that's across all product lines here. And then when it's loaded, we gauge every single round. They actually go into minimum chambers, make sure everything fits. If it doesn't fit, it's getting called out. Everything's looked at from the head stamp end to the tip. If anything's wrong or off spec or something's going on, everything gets... they get pulled out, so it doesn't get sent to the consumer. So that's another thing. It's, I mean, 100 every single round gets looked at.
Right.
So it's there's just a lot of quality control that goes into every one of our products.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things, for me only being here for the past year, when I came to the facility for the first time, like to see just what goes into making our ammo was pretty damn impressive, I would say. Walking the floor, really seeing, not only the equipment that it takes to do this and how accurate that equipment is, but also the people on the floor that have the desire that like want it to be the absolute best that it can possibly be, right? I mean, good enough isn't good enough for yeah. us, if you will, right? Like we almost always kind of look at things as, you know, in a way almost like match grade standards for even our cheapest stuff, which is kind of crazy. You know, you look at Harvest or even talking about like centerfire stuff, right? Like, I mean, yeah, it's mass produced, but it still has tighter tolerances than let's just say 90% of the other ammo that's on the market right now.
Yeah. And as well as the components that go into it, right?
Right.
You know, like you mentioned the JHP centerfire rifle, you know, it is our lower price point, but it's still premium ammo. I mean, right. this stuff's still quality components, good brass, good primers, good propellants,
yeah.
good projectiles. Still held to, as Mitchell said, tight standards,
yeah.
Quality control practices. And the people on the floor, like you mentioned, I think that's worth noting. It is unique, I feel, in a production environment because they do care. You know, whether
right.
it's operators, loading operators, press operators building the bullets, you know, shipping people, inspectors, the quality control.
Well, and I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, they're not here just because it's a 9-to-5 job, right? They love the brand. They're also end users,
yeah.
right? So like they look at it as, you know, I'm going to go use this in the field. I'm going to go hunt with it. I'm going to go shoot a match with it, whatever that it is. So I'm essentially loading it for myself in a way, which is kind of a cool way to look at it, right?
Right.
Like, instead of, again, just being a 9-to-5 job of just like, hey, I got to punch in, punch out, and, you know, I need to run through whatever, 50,000 parts today or something, 2,000 parts a day. You know, they're definitely trying to have that utmost attention to detail on everything that they do.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of passion here.
Right.
That stands out across the board in multiple areas, different people. There's a lot of passion. They take pride in what they do. Very critical,
yeah. you
know, even to the point of being sometimes too critical,
yeah.
you know, but it's, you know, it's kind of part of the culture at
right.
Barnes. It's pretty unique.
Yeah, absolutely. Got anything else, Mitchell, before we start having a little bit deeper dives?
I can say a little bit kind of about our R&D process too. You know, how we get to factory loaded ammo. It's a very rigorous process and how we get to our finalized loads and selecting what propellants and what velocities to hit. It's a extremely rigorous process. Like I said, we have temperature chambers. We're testing extreme hots, extreme colds. We'll test ambient. We cycle rounds through our rifles that you'll see in the field.
Yep.
Make sure everything's feeding okay. There's no issues. There's no primer leaks or extraction issues, anything like that. And it's a huge process. So that's another part that makes our product shoot so well.
Well, and I know that you touched on our underground range, right? But like we're not only shooting it out to 300 yards and calling it good and kind of knowing what our velocities are going to be and everything, right? Like, I mean, I've been there as part of it where we're going to longer, you know, outdoor ranges that we can shoot out to 1,000, 1,200 yards, getting Doppler data to understand the true bullet drop and the true ballistics, the G1, G7, right, of the BC for everything, even out to those very extended ranges, as well as, you know, and this is kind of going back to the bullets, but like doing the gel testing out to 700-800 yards to truly, you know, you can have a theory of what it's going to do, but then you have to actually put it to use, right? And
right.
And again, I think that just goes back to everything that we do, we kind of overdo,
yeah.
you know, like you said, almost to a hindrance to the company in a way, because it's expensive to do all this, right? I mean, it takes man hours. You know, when we went to the range that day, I think that we had six guys there, right? And just getting all that data, all that stuff to create, to be able to give the end user the best possible thing that we can give them, and what we would like to think is the best ammo on the market.
Yeah, you know, and that is a good point. you know, we've invested as a company in the, from the development stage, the production testing, a lot goes into it.
Yep.
You know, the lab itself, the range, the facility, the equipment, all the way from instrumentation, test barrels, PV barrels, sensors. This stuff is not cheap.
Right.
I mean, it adds up quick. Yeah. You know, they've invested a lot of money and time and resources into ensuring that we have quality performing products, you know, from the front end developing all the way through, you know, everyday production. And like Mitchell brought up, you know, part of that process too is we qualify those components. I think it's worth noting we do not manufacture the brass shell in-house, at least not at this time.
Right.
And so we source those from different suppliers.
Right.
And we've sourced brass from many different people. And we put it through a extremely rigorous test.
Right.
All the way where we're rejecting brass to the point of, you know, and you have to balance, obviously, business relationships. You know, we're not trying to piss people off.
Right. But
there's been multiple brass manufacturers, what I'll say, very reputable brands that, you know, everyone can make mistakes. You know, I'm not pointing fingers. Everyone has the chance in any production environment to have something slip through or something go wrong. But we've rejected shells for multiple manufacturers that don't meet our standards.
Right.
And we're selecting those components, primers that, you know, we try to select the best primers for that load. Well, primers that are consistent and are going to have good ignition and are reliable.
Yeah. And I guess what I was going to kind of jump to there was, you know, how long does it take, for example, and I've kind of learned this over the past year, is when we decide to develop a new load for a specific cartridge, whatever that it is, I mean, it's not like, let's say, the standard ladder test, if you will, mm-hmm. for the average Joe that's going out there and saying, okay, I'm going to run this powder because, you know, this says this will give me decent velocity and accuracy. So now I'm going to load up whatever, 15 shells and run five different, you know, grain weights or something, and then just kind of start to narrow that down. We're doing it a lot deeper, right? We're testing multiple different powders for every single load.
Yep.
Seeding depths, everything, right? So how long what would you say is kind of the average that it takes to develop just one single load? Like, for example, when we were developing the 7PRC stuff, like how long did that truly take?
The 7PRC we spent a lot of time on.
Yeah.
But on average, just get through what we call the hand load stage,
yeah.
Which is where we're qualifying the four major components.
Mm-hmm.
But we go through a big powder screening. You know, generally, we at times will have some primer selection, you know, depending on what's available. But obviously, the primer has to be sufficient ignition for that propellant in that cartridge at those temperatures as well.
Yeah.
Shell. Like I said, there's generally, that's where we work with sourcing to say, okay, what shells can we get? We put it through our test standards. Does it meet our criteria? But once we have the primer and the shell found and we know what bolt we're going to load,
mm-hmm.
And before I jump too much into to answer your question, I think it's worth noting too, one advantage with Barnes Loading Ammunition as a bullet company first, as a bullet manufacturer, you know, we are the experts. We know which projectile to load in which cartridge.
Right.
We know when a projectile needs to be optimized for a given cartridge, you know, all the way to where we make unique bullets for ammo.
You know,
this isn't just a hand loading component that might get loaded in five different 30 caliber.
Right.
Right. This one's a 308 wind specific or 300 PRC specific.
Exactly.
Or, hey, we're going to build a 152 grain LRX specifically for the 280 ACLI improved.
Right.
Those kind of scenarios, you know, we'll get into it deeper with reduced recoil where we've really optimized those projectiles.
Yeah.
But I just want to bring that up where it's another advantage because we know the ins and outs of the bullet. We know the ins and outs of that projectile to say, this is the exact fit. If we need to move a cantilever for a different seating depth, or if we need to tweak the function window a little bit for that bullet to put it in that cartridge specifically, we have the advantage in the ease of doing that, you know, as the bullet manufacturer. And so the Barnes loaded ammunition, you know, really has the leg up there versus other. You know, there's some great companies that are loading our bullets, you know, not to dog on them. There's some awesome ammo companies that buy Barnes bullets and load them in their ammo.
Right.
And there's some great products. But I think that's one advantage when you have the inside information, the experts making those decisions to say, okay, this bullet, this projectile is going to go into this cartridge, you know, for this application.
Right.
Yeah, that's a big advantage.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to go back to on the testing, ballistic coefficient, it's extremely difficult to measure. Even at 100 yards with our state-of-the-art equipment, it's still not good enough. You can maybe get within 10% at 100 yards.
Okay.
So we measure at 300 here, and then we go out to the range and shoot Doppler, get those values. You can't just say it's estimated based on drop or use our computer program, because the computer program...
Why can't
program,
we do that? A lot of other people are doing that.
Yeah, that's... it's not good. Like I said, it's extremely difficult to measure, and that's why we shoot Doppler. That's why we shoot at 300 yards. That's one of the things we do out at the range. The LR products will actually shoot real gel, real ordnance gel, not the silicone clear gel. That's the cheap, easy option. It's not a valid medium. It's good for simple things. It doesn't melt when it's out in the sun, and it's convenient for that. But actually measuring performance, ordnance gel is the way to go. So we'll do that with Vortex LR. Vortex will go to a little bit more reasonable range for what guys are shooting. And then just looking at this Pioneer box too, we actually list two muzzle velocities, one for a 24-inch barrel for 45-70 and one for 18. So we actually took rifles at different barrel lengths and measured velocity through all of them. Our chronographs can get to a tenth of a percent in terms of accuracy. So we tested a bunch of different rifles for the lever guns. And then for some of the cartridges, we shot revolvers and lever guns and listed two velocities. So just a ton of testing on the development side and as we run production as well.
Yeah.
And Barnes has a ton of really cool capabilities here in terms of ballistic testing equipment and experience here that we can really offer the best product to the consumers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so real quick before I forget and we get too far, to go back to your question, it's generally, I'd say we have a R&D tech that probably spends a solid week to 2 weeks just on the handload portion.
Right.
You know, he's loading hundreds to even sometimes over 1,000 rounds, doing powder screening and what we call our sensitivity testing, where once we've really narrowed it down to maybe the top two or three choices of propellants, we go through sensitivity, we go through, you know, different coal variation, we go through powder positioning testing where we're putting powder to bullet, powder to primer, hot, cold.
Yeah, so when you're doing that, like what type of temperature ranges are you
working in there? We condition the rounds on the cold side at negative 20.
Okay.
And then on the hot side, we're at plus 150.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And obviously we're looking for pressure shifts, you know, dropping and climbing, as well as velocity shifts that go along with that. You know, we're looking for selecting components that are still going to work together that are reliable. You know, obviously there's always going to be variation.
Yeah.
And when you add temperature extremes of negative 20 and plus 150, you're going to introduce a lot of variation.
Right.
But there's propellants that work extremely well and are incredibly flat.
Right.
Still, you know, we're looking for good performance, especially when we look at, say, the Vortex LR, Precision Match, those types of lines where we're, you know, and we don't always have, you know, everything available. That's the other thing. It can be a challenge. I mean, just being upfront, the world we've lived in for the past, say, 4 or 5 years with propellants and even shell cases, you know, it's a challenge at times, even to the point where we could be back ordered on a product or we're not getting product to market because we don't have the propellant we need or we don't have the shells that meet our requirements, which sucks to be in that position. But that's just sometimes we've made those decisions where we're not putting ammo on the market because it doesn't meet our standard. We don't have the shells available or this propellant. We can get this propellant that works. This other one, you know, it's okay, those kind of situations, but we hold ourselves to those standards. And luckily, we've been able to find workarounds, you know, and we've had to at times, you know, make changes with propellants and things like that, but we still meet those standards, both on accuracy, pressure, velocity, you know, velocity variation, as well as temperature sensitivity.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy. I didn't know that we went to those extremes. I mean, you're talking, what, 170 degree swing in temperatures, right? I mean, 99% of people are never going to hunt at negative 20 degrees. And I would say probably that same 99% probably aren't really hunting over 90 degrees, maybe early antelope or something like that. Or, you know, down in South Texas or something, right? But for the most part, like, nobody is ever going to see these huge temperature swings. They might see it in the 30s to the 70s,
right,
give or take, right? So, like, we're going way outside of those, if you would call it kind of the standard normal temperature ranges that people would probably do it at. And to say that we're doing that for, I mean, I would guess, and you can correct me here, but like probably 80 to 90% of our loaded ammo rounds are doing this type of temperature ranges. Again, right? Like you almost don't need it because more than likely you really only need it kind of for that hunting, you know, maybe even the top tier hunting stuff, but we're still going to do it because that's our standard.
Right. And our entire lines, regardless of the offering, go through the safety standards, and requirements there. Right. Make sure that it's reliable and it's safe.
Yep.
Pressure and velocity.
Right.
You know, we're not going to have anything crazy at those extremes.
Right.
And then obviously, depending on the product line and the application, we have different criteria.
Yeah.
For what we're looking for, whether it be how much velocity variation we're willing to accept. You know, obviously, I mentioned like Vortex LR, Precision Match. You know, we're going to hold those to tighter standards for velocity variation at extreme temperatures than say, you know, the JHP rifle,
right,
and those kind of things.
So. Right, right.
You'd be surprised how many issues we see at those temperature extremes. That's probably one of the most difficult things to pass. And there's a reason why we do it. If you go sight in your rifle on a hot summer day in Utah, and it's 100 degrees outside, that's not uncommon here. You set your ammo on your dash, it can get up to 150.
Right.
And if you're not using the right propellants, you can have unsafe pressures with certain propellant types. So we fail those and switch to a different propellant.
Right.
And same thing at cold. If you look at, it's negative 20 is, you can get there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, on cold it's a different thing where maybe your gun won't go off. You have a hang fire or misfire or have extremely low velocity. You can have a lot of issues there.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of craze for the small rifle primers where it shouldn't be, where usually there are large rifle primers like in a Creedmoor or something.
Yeah.
And that's maybe fine for shooting a match or something, but you take a small rifle primer and you want to go hunt in Minnesota negative 20, which is, it can legit be colder than that.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely.
You're going to have issues.
Yeah.
And that's why we test that, and that's why we have large rifle primers in there. We haven't made that change, but it is legitimate. You run into a ton of issues at hot and cold, and that's one of the hardest things that we have to go through as far as testing.
Okay, quick question before we get off the hot and cold. What's the coldest temperature that you've ever killed an animal in?
Killed an animal in? That would probably be a cow elk. It was a late season cow elk hunt in Utah, and is actually fairly local to where we are right now.
Okay.
And believe it or not, myself and Chris in the lab, we had these cow tags, and we'd been watching this herd pretty close to our location here. And somehow we managed to pull off killing two cow elk after work on a Wednesday night.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you had like an hour?
It may be an hour. Yeah. It was like, hey, let's leave here. We like busted out of here like a few minutes early after 4 o'clock, got on the elk. We were trying to make it happen, killing two elk at once.
Right.
Usually doesn't work out that way. Like a 3-2-1 kind of thing.
Yeah.
Shoot. But
I always have a 3-2 boom, and then and then the other guy shoots.
Yeah. So I'm laying down, freezing cold in the snow. My hands are like numb. I was clear. He was waiting for a clear shot. And it was, I'm not going to have too extreme because I'm kind of a pansy when it comes to, I'm not like a Minnesota guy.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was single digit.
Yeah.
It was cold. It was kind of a cold snap, and it was probably 5-6 degrees if I remember right. It was cold.
Okay.
But just laying there in the snow waiting for that shot as you're getting numb and cold. Oh, it was miserable.
So single digits for Greg.
Yeah. Single digits.
Mitchell, what's the coldest temperature?
we killed some elk in Montana. It was, yeah, single digits, 5-6 degrees. In the mornings, it was zero.
Yeah.
I've pheasant hunted in 0 degrees, maybe a few below zero. I grouse hunted in negative 17 in northern Minnesota. I didn't see anything.
But. Well, okay.
Never killed in negative 17.
I should have said big game. Sorry. I was trying to keep it to that, I guess. So yeah. You're going to say single digits probably for elk hunting?
Yeah, nothing too extreme. I think I've tried calling coyotes before.
Yeah.
In pretty cold, but like I said, at that point, I'm just going to probably stay home.
Well, I will say this is a testament, again, way before I ever worked here. My first year living in Montana, it was Thanksgiving Day. I went out and I still had my elk tag, and I was like, I'm just going to go kill an elk. Thanksgiving Day, I went out and it was negative 24, right? I found some elk pretty quick. I was about the only person out there because it was negative 24. Killed the elk. I killed a cow elk at hour and a half after sunrise. And by time that I got packed out, and it was 1 p.m. or so after, you know, cutting her up and packing her out in knee to almost waist deep snow. I mean, it was pretty brutal. Again, it was my first year in Montana. I was like, I'm just going to be a hard ass, right, and mountain man, and I'm just going to go and do it. It was negative 11 on my truck when I got back at 1 p.m. So it was somewhere in that. I mean, it was probably negative 17, negative 20 probably when I killed her. So, again, great testament. Yeah. I was shooting Vortex 7 rim mag, right? So great testament that it does work.
Yeah. Those are pretty cold temps.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's possible, you know, guys in Africa, they hit high temperatures.
Right.
You know, we talked about the safari line.
Yeah.
Making sure the propellants and the primer and that cartridge combination is compatible for good ignition as well as safe pressures. You know, whether it be, Mitchell brought up a good point with a small rifle primer in standard cases. You know, that is a trend on the match world. It might work great. There's arguments that it could lower standard deviation and get better, more consistent ignition, but if you're out there calling coyotes and it's single digits or below, or you're hunting elk in Montana on Thanksgiving and it's negative 20, I wouldn't rely on a small rifle primer igniting that propellant, a 6.5 Creedmoor or, you know, whatever it be.
Right.
And even on top of that, even with Magnums, you know, we go through development with the, you know, we have a really good Ultramag lines in the Vortex. 300 Ultramag, 7 Ultramag. And those big Magnums with the propellants that we use, they're tough to ignite.
Yeah.
And it takes a very specific primer. It's that basically there's one primer that works good in those Ultramags to get through consistent ignition with those powder chargers and those propellant types. And it's that testing and, you know, being willing to invest into that to take it all the way that deep and say, okay, these are the components we need to use. This is what we need to source. This is what we're going to go through for development to make sure it meets our criteria.
Right. All right. Well, I know we're kind of on a time crunch because we do have a meeting here in a little bit, but let's do a quick dive into the Vortex line and just the overview. I mean, we could talk about Vortex, but I'd like to talk about Vortex LR, Safari, and reduced recoil.
Yeah. So Vortex, like I said earlier, Vortex is, and you mentioned this, Vortex is our main bread and butter. It's the biggest line.
Yeah.
It has the most offerings across, you know, 223 up to the Safari stuff, you know.
Right.
But that's your standard, you know, 243, 270 Win, 6.5 Creedmoor, you know, 30-06, 308, all those different, you know, TTSX is mainly the projectile that's featured in Vortex rifle. Goes through the standards we've talked about, the testing. Really, it's your general purpose hunting ammunition for everything big game is Vortex. And it's accurate. That's the other thing to bring up, you know, and we've talked about this with the bullet side. TSXs, TTSXs are extremely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
300 Win Mag, I've mentioned this already on this podcast, 300 Win Mag, 180 grain, TTSX and Vortex rifle, it just works.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that load through multiple test barrels. I can't tell you how many rifles shoot that load.
You know?
And again, there's always variables, right? I think it's worth noting, whether it be velocity, you know, Mitchell brought up, we took a lot of effort, we put a lot of effort and took a lot of time on Pioneer to give you both barrel lengths. Yep. You know, if it was carbine and rifle, if it was revolver and carbine, you know, yep. like you look at 357 and the 44 mags, and the others, we listed a 6-inch and a 18-inch on a lot of those, mm-hmm. which is cool because it gives, at least it's something, right? It's a number right. on a box, but we want to be as accurate as we can. But I think it's worth noting, whether it be velocity out of your gun versus his gun versus your gun, my test barrel,
yeah.
or whether it be accuracy, there's always going to be variables. You know, we can't control how our ammo shoots out of every gun.
Yep.
You know, the velocity isn't going to be exactly the same as the box out of every gun. There's variables in chamber dimensions, tolerances, different reamers, different barrel profiles, barrel lengths. You know, there's all these factors.
Right.
So it is worth noting that. But I think we do a good job of taking time to make as most accurate, usable information, whether it's the most accurate BC that we can provide you, accurate, consistent velocities on the box. You know, Vortex LR, we went as far as shooting. Originally, we actually listed multiple drop charts, even out to further distances. You know, your generic drop on most boxes maybe gives you drop out to 400 yards.
Right.
With Vortex LR, we have data charts on our website that's now available that shows out to, say, 600 or 700 yards, as well as different temperature and elevation.
Yep.
You know, in today's world, most people are going to use some sort of ballistic app, and you know, whether it be on your smartphone or we have a chronograph or, you know, with the new kind of Garmin style chronos. I mean, it's pretty awesome, the technology right. and the equipment that's there.
Yeah. And how easy it is, right? And how quick it is to be able to get your data.
Right. But at the end of the day, if a guy's in the field and all he has to go off of is what's on the box, we want to try to provide him with as most consistent, accurate information as we can.
Yeah, it's interesting. Over the weekend, I actually had a guy reach out to me that had been watching the podcast and was like, hey, man, I don't have a chronograph. I just got the 7PRC. It has a 22-inch barrel. Like, I'm shooting your guys' 7PRC. Like, what should I expect for velocities? I'm like, oh, well, perfect. My 7PRC also has a 22-inch barrel. This is what I'm getting roughly out of it. This is what you should get. So you should be able to at least put it into your ballistic solver and figure out.
Right.
And he's, I was like, go with this. I think I'm getting like give or take right at 3000 foot per second out of my 7PRC. And he messages me back 2 days later and he's like, that's amazing, man. He's like, I literally just put in your exact same data for my gun, started shooting it. And I had first round impacts at 700 yards with it.
Yeah.
Like,
that's awesome.
That's pretty damn impressive to know that. And this guy's, I think he was down in Texas, I believe. Maybe he was the Midwest. But, you know, different elevations, different temperature ranges, like all that type of stuff. And yet we're still able to, like, do that. And knowing that roughly we have the same gun, all this, you know, because he was just scared that he was going to be losing 150 feet per second or something like that out of the muzzle. But, you know, again, kind of the testament to that is one thing that I've noticed is I'm actually getting almost like the exact same speed that we advertise on the box for a shorter barrel. And a lot of people are telling me that they're getting the speed or faster, which, you know, not to call out other manufacturers, but there's a lot of other manufacturers that never get to those speeds.
Yeah.
Right. That they advertise or they're grossly under.
For sure. It's, you know, and again, there's always going to be those times where your gun's not going to match what's on the box.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't mean that the data wasn't accurate, but there are those times where, I mean, there's when the majority of guns is 200 plus feet off from what's on the box.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah.
Something's a little bit off here.
So to make a point on that, we do account for that.
Yeah.
That's with our standard SAMI testing. We shoot a reference lot of ammo out of a test barrel. And the reference lot has been assessed by multiple other people in the industry. And it's this is the average velocity, this is the average pressure, and we make adjustments to that. So even if our barrel is shooting a little bit different, we make adjustments to it to get more of an average. And we always try to hit our box velocity. We don't try to go high or low, or it's always, we try to get nominal. And then an important thing to note that some people may not know, we always go to the SAMI barrel length.
Right.
So what do we have here? We have a 30-06. At 2750, that's out of a 24-inch SAMI test barrels. Different for every cartridge. Usually rifles are 24.
Yeah.
But like you said, if you have something different, you might want to subtract a little bit. If you have a 22-inch or 20-inch, or if you have a 26-inch, you might get a little bit more. So that's something to pay attention to.
Well, and I think that one thing to talk about there, right, is that as people are doing more, let's call it custom or even semi-custom, because, I mean, in my 7 PRTs, I consider it kind of a semi-custom gun, right? I just slapped a new barrel on it, slapped a new stock on it, but I shortened up that barrel by 2 inches. What's kind of the average when it comes to every – I've heard numbers before, but getting your guys' perspective on it as well. Like, every 2 inches is, from what I've heard, is anywhere from 20 to 50 feet per second that you're going to kind of start to lose.
Yeah, I mean, there's – it's an average, like I said, and it's more of a guesstimate because right. Each propellant's going to act different. You know, right. Some are more efficient. Some are going to lose more in the same cartridge. I mean, we've 7 PRC, you talked about development on that.
Yeah.
You know, we shot through a lot of test barrels. We also shot through a lot of guns. We'd really narrowed down to a couple propellants. We wanted to make sure the accuracy was still there. You know, obviously pressure, velocity, all the safety, you know, those have all been checked.
Right.
We're just looking at pure performance now. What is velocity? What is the velocity variation? You know, low standard deviation as well as accuracy out of multiple guns. And it was interesting because one of the propellants, you know, they all met velocity out of our standard 24-inch test barrels. But when we go to 22-inch guns and 20-inch guns, one of the propellants didn't lose very much, you know, where the other is starting to lose more. But you're usually in that 25 to, I'd say, probably 35 feet per inch.
Per inch?
Yeah.
Okay. So
sometimes less. You know, I have seen where, you know, it is more 25 feet for 2 inches.
Yeah. Okay.
But on average, you're probably more in that 25 to 35.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's really important as suppressors become a bigger and bigger thing, right? Okay. Guys are trying to go shorter barrels and still achieve, you know, decent speeds. So I think that's really important just to understand that. And I think that a lot of people, right, that they want the suppressor, so then they get the shorter barrel and they're like, well, this is weird. I'm losing 100 feet per second. Well, yeah, you just cut off 4 inches of barrel.
Like, right, which you got to pay attention to. I mean, you look at 6.5 Creedmoor. I mean, it's obviously popular. It's been around a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, everyone loves it or hates it or both. But our 127 is an awesome option in the Vortex LR. We'll start to talk about Vortex LR with that.
Yeah.
24 inches, Sammy test barrel.
Right.
A lot of guns out there are 22 inch. A ton of guys are running 20 inch. Next thing you know, it's like, why not go 18, 16? Like you said, right. I got this suppressor. I'm packing around this rifle. Yeah. I want something short and handy. I totally get it. But if I'm now running an 18-inch barrel 6.5 Creedmoor, and it's not a powerhouse to begin with.
Right.
It's not some super magnum.
Yeah.
Our box velocity on our 127 Vortex LR is 2840 feet per second. But now you're down to an 18 or 20-inch barrel. You know, that's limiting your range as well because of retain velocity, right? You start out slower, you're obviously going to be slower, and that bullet is designed to expand well at low velocity with that 127 LRX.
Yeah.
But when you just lost maybe 150, 200 feet, and you already were only starting out at 2840,
right?
And now we're talking 2650 to 2700 feet per second at the muzzle, you know, you really can limit your range. Maybe that's only a 300-400 yard load now,
right?
You know, where we took it out and we did the testing on that one originally, you know, we're setting gel at 600-700 yards with these Vortex LR products.
Yeah.
You know, we got good bullet expansion at 600 yards in gel with the 6.5 Creedmoor load.
Wow.
Out of a 24-inch barrel.
Right.
So it's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
You know, and that's obviously where you look at things like the 7 Backcountry or the 7 PRC, you know, where it's still pushing our 160 grain. I mean, I put together a 20-inch gun with our factory load with our 160 in the Vortex LR. I mean, I'm still getting almost 2,900 feet per second. I'm like 2,890 out of a 20 inch.
Right.
Pretty good performance still. Still, and then I'm able to run a can, still keep it short and handy. But I think it's just worth mentioning the velocity, you know, the number on the box, we're going to provide you with the most accurate data possible.
Right.
But there's always variables that we can't control. What platform are you shooting it out of? What's your barrel length? Those kind of things.
Right. And that's what I was going to say, right, is that all of our stuff is always going to be Sammy specs, right? So it's going to be the Sammy spec barrels, it's going to be that twist rate, it's going to be, you know, that type of velocity that we're trying to get out.
Unless we specifically state otherwise, like the Pioneer, where we're going to say, okay, this is an 18-inch barrel and a 24-inch barrel.
Right.
We're stating on the box what the barrel length is.
Yeah.
You know, if it's just a velocity, it's just going to the Sammy spec.
Yeah.
We do that on pistol stuff. We'll say, have an asterisk and say this is out of a certain barrel length.
Right.
Because that's out of revolvers, it makes a huge difference whether you're know, well, super short. Or
I guess I should have prefaced that that's out of most of our center fire rifle stuff, right? Yeah. Like you start to talk about Pioneer, you know, where that is made for revolvers or lever guns. You could have a lot of different barrel lengths and everything that, yeah, you know, that's where having what we are put out there is super helpful. Okay. Let's talk about reduced recoil real quick. Give me 5 minutes on why people should check out reduced recoil and what it was really designed to do.
Yeah. I'll start quick and Mitchell can clean up my mess, whatever I miss. But reduced recoil, it's one that, you know, from just kind of a outside looking in, it's like, oh, it's simple. We just lower the velocity, right? You just take powder out. That's not really how it works. There was actually a lot of development that went into reduced recoil.
Yeah.
We put a lot of effort to select the right propellants. We looked at, obviously, we're lowering the velocity. You know, we're specifically going to say, okay, we're going to take a 270, a 7 Rem Mag, a 300 Win Mag, a 308, a 30-06. We're going to lower the velocity. That's going to help lower the recoil. But it's not the only factor.
Right.
We also wanted it to be consistent. We want it to be safe and reliable. We want good performance, good accuracy, low muzzle flash. That's one thing that we found through development when we're starting to use specific propellants. You know, this is not some easy, you just go take powder out. We're now using burn rates and propellants that are abnormal for that cartridge and bullet combination.
Yeah.
In order to get safe, reliable ignition and good performance, good velocity, good pressure, we found that we could hit all the boxes with, say, powder A, but it would give us a fireball out the muzzle, just crazy muzzle flash. And so, again, we had to dig deeper, find another solution.
Yeah.
But with the reduced recoil, we also looked at the bullet. You know, I mentioned that earlier. We were the bullet guys, right? We were the bullet company, right?
Right.
We build Barnes bullets first, not just the ammunition. We knew if we just took a standard TTSX and loaded it at lower muzzle velocity, kind of like I just mentioned with the 6.5 scenario with a shorter barrel,
right,
you're going to limit your, you know, maximum effective range for bullet expansion because your velocity is that much lower.
Right.
So we built specific purpose-built projectiles. These are unique optimized TTSXs that are loaded into reduced recoil to function at lower velocity. You know, these were purpose-built bullets that only go into that ammunition that have different function criteria. When we build it, they have different internal cavity, different tooling design to be able to function at those lower velocities. So
Right. You
can get low recoil. You know, it is at a lower velocity, and a lot of these are going to be lighter than normal bullet weights, and that also helps with that felt recoil. But we also measured it, and I'll let Mitchell kind of go into some details there. He probably has some more data off the top of his head. But we were able to reduce some of these, you know, and Mitchell can correct me, but, I mean, these are 20, 30% reduced felt recoil.
Yeah.
You know, so you take a 270 Win or a 7 Rem Mag with a standard Vortex load, and if I throw my, you know, 10-year-old daughter behind it,
right,
you know, she's probably not going to have that pleasant of experience at the range.
Yeah.
But if she's shooting reduced recoil, you know, all of a sudden she can use that gun.
Right.
And so to me, the application is, it's a couple things. One, it could be the magnums. You know, we offer 300 Win Mag, 7 Rem Mag options in reduced recoil. Maybe you want that magnum to go hunt elk, or you went to Africa, or you're going out west and you're hunting big game.
Yeah.
But now I'm just shooting whitetail.
At, right.
100 yards, 150 yards.
Yeah.
But I still want to use my 300 Win Mag. You know, reduced recoil is a good option to be able to give you good performing ammunition. It's still going to work great out to 300 yards in those magnums, but I don't have to beat the crap out of my shoulder. Another potential use case would be, you know, guns are expensive. They've gotten better.
Right.
I'd say you can buy more accurate guns for a lot less than it used to be 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, everyone has limited funds.
Right.
And so if I'm going to buy, you know, I have kids, they all hunt and I'm getting them into hunting. You know, my boys have hunted quite a bit now and they're 14 and 16. But when they started out at 12 years old, you know, you buy them like a 243 Win. And next thing you know, well, now he's going to go hunt elk. He gets lucky and draws some awesome tag somewhere.
Right.
You really going to go with your 243 Win to go hunt elk in Utah? Probably not. You know, okay. But he can use my 300 Win Mag with this reduced recoil ammo.
Exactly.
Or he can use my 7 Rem Mag. Or maybe it's you inherited grandpa's 30-06.
Exactly.
You know, and it's a wood stock, you know, not the most pleasant butt pad.
Yeah.
But you want to use grandpa's 30-06 or your dad's gun or whatever.
Right.
You know, that's another awesome awesome use for reduced recoil is a recoil sensitive shooter, be it a kid, you know, a woman, a youth, somebody with a shoulder injury. You know, there's multiple applications to where an end user could say, okay, I can still get good performance, I can still get good accuracy, get good velocity, and it's bullets that were specific purpose built to function at those lower velocities.
Right.
You know, whether it be I went out and bought my kid a 6.5 Creedmoor and he's just starting out at 10 years old.
Yep.
Or my wife has never shot a gun before for somebody, you know, and maybe they're just brand new shooter.
Yep. So that's what I did last year, actually. Got married just, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago. And the wife, last fall was our first hunting season. And she's, I don't think she's ever shot before that. So I got her on the 6.5 Grendel, loves that, put a can on it. Hardly any recoil, but I'm not going to hunt elk with that. So yeah. I had a 30-06, and I didn't want her to want to jump into a full house load and have her get gun shy and flinch and have issues. I wanted her to be able to dial and work the bolt and just like how she's going to practice for elk hunting. So I used the reduced recoil, the 130 grain 30-06 load, and like Rick said, it's it reduces it maybe on average is 20-30%, probably closer to 25. Yeah. But our 300 Win Mag, we actually measured from one of our industry friends, and compared to our standard Vortex load, I think it was 48%.
Wow.
Reduction in force, and the force was spread out a lot longer too. So yeah. that's a huge difference from you can take your 300 Win Mag and cut the recoil in half, and all of a sudden a new shooter can go shoot it.
Right.
I got her sighted in with the 30-06. She didn't have any issues with it. When she wasn't looking, I slipped in a full house load when we went elk hunting because I didn't know what distance we were going to be shooting.
Right.
The reduced recoil, you do got to pay attention
to your distance.
Yeah, so yeah. Where we were going to be, you could shoot pretty dang far. So I slipped in a full house nice. When she wasn't looking, and she didn't have any issues. The adrenaline was pumping.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny how when you're pulling the trigger on an animal, right, you never feel the recoil, you never hear the gun go off, like all that stuff. So yeah. You can kind of do that for sure. But I mean, I think that reduced recoil is a really cool round. You know, obviously you hit on all the things. I wish that I would have had it when I was younger, right? I mean, because I look at it, I started with a 30-30, right? Then I started shooting like 243. Then I had to get a 270. And it felt like, I'm sure that my parents were like, damn, every year and a half, I'm having to get this guy a new gun because he's, you know, growing up, he's getting bigger and right. He can just handle more. Where nowadays you can look at it and be like, well, you know, you have a 12-year-old son and you're like, well, I don't need him shooting a 30-06 or a 7 mag or something right now, but I know that in 3 years he's going to be able to handle it.
Right.
So I might as well just go ahead and buy him the gun then and then shoot the reduced recoil. You're still getting an all copper projectile, a bullet that was made to expand at those velocities, right? Yeah, he's not going to have the crazy extended range that you would want out of that cartridge maybe, but still 300 yards for a 12-year-old's
yeah.
pretty dang long shot most
yeah.
of the time.
Yeah, and I'd say the standard cartridges in the reduced recoil line, you know, we made sure you get good bullet expansion out to 300 yards.
Yep.
And with the two magnums, it's out to 400 yards.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, that was a pretty good one. Do we want to talk briefly about Harvest, since we haven't done it? We're going to do a full podcast on Harvest.
Yeah, we could.
But we do want to wait until we can get one of the Sierra guys here to kind of.
Should we chat hit about Safari? That.
Yeah, quick? I mean, yeah, I think Safari would be good, and then maybe just like quick brief overview of Harvest, just yeah. because it's so new.
So Safari, like I said earlier, it's a part of the Vortex line, Vortex Safari. These are obviously Safari offerings.
Yep.
Cartridges, you know, 375 H&H,
right?
458 Win Mag. We do 416 Rigby, 416 Reg Mag, 470, 500 Nitro with a solid end to TSX, you know, kind of that classic African combo. Really, I've mentioned this before, with a TSX, you can look at it as an expanding solid. Me personally, if I'm hunting Cape Buffalo, I'm probably just going to use a TSX, but you could still have a solid to back it up. But if you are doing stuff like Elephant, those other things, you know, we have the Banded Solid offering. That one was quite a bit went into as well for development. Point of impact, that's worth noting. We put a lot into ensuring that those two loads are going to have, you know, a reasonable acceptable point of impact. So if you're zeroed with the TSX, the solid's going to work alongside of it. You don't have to worry about re-zeroing, especially the distances that you're going to be using these for.
Right.
Propellants and components, you know, quality premium components, good shell cases, good primers, good powder selection, good velocity. You know, it's really just high quality premium ammo to go hunt, you know, big, mean, dangerous stuff with big bore, hard kicking type guns.
But yeah,
a lot went into that. We have a double rifle in the lab, 470 nitro that everyone loves to shoot.
Yeah,
we can't even get Mitchell to shoot it.
No,
he's a pansy.
I'm a chicken.
But
I think they're fun to shoot.
But when we did the development way back when, I actually remember personally shooting that one out of the rifle off a bench. And if you want miserable, shoot a 470 nitro double gun on a bench, you know, standing up and being able to just take it.
Right.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Set it on a bench and try to shoot accuracy groups. We were shooting at 50 yards and I was shooting solids and TSXs going through powder screening to look at point of impact. And then we also went through all that FNC testing, which is function casually, where it's feed, function, fire. And we shot, I mean, literally hundreds of rounds off shoulder out of those double guns. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
It's a good way to develop a flinch and ruin your shooting ability.
Right.
But it's just one more thing where we took the time and effort to to really, you know, deep dive and make sure we select the right components and have a good quality performing
product. Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense, obviously, for us to have a Safari load, right? Because, I mean, we go back to kind of the history barns and as the Brooks kind of took them over, right? Like Africa was a big thing for them, and they wanted to be there. They wanted to, you know, take these really large animals and stuff. So we developed bullets for it. So why not have the actual loaded component for it as well?
Yeah,
so people could buy stuff off the shelf.
That for sure. And that's when I was quite a few years ago. I remember the first time I ever went to SCI Shell Safari Club.
Yeah.
It was in Reno, Nevada. And, you know, this is way back when, 15 plus years ago.
Right.
And I remember I was just amazed because, like, I knew Barnes, Africa, like you said, it's kind of goes hand in hand.
Right.
But I was amazed because I cannot tell you how many PHs walked into the booth and they wanted our product. You know, back then it was just the bullets.
Yeah.
You know, we were selling just the component box bullets. And they would buy up what they needed for the year. But it was time and time and time again, the PHs that were how much they love Barnes, how much it worked for them. I don't let anyone shoot anything but Barnes. If they come into my camp, I always recommend Barnes. You know, it was a true testament to the product and the performance of the product. You know, those diehard, you know, just hands-on, you know, experience that are seeing hundreds of animals a year, big animals, hard-to-kill animals. You know, those PHs in Africa that really love the product. And obviously with the Vortex Safari, it allows, you know, the factory ammo shooter an option to be able to get into that big bore stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, even this year at SCI, right? Like we had so many guys walk into the booth and PHs from Africa, other places as well, right? And it's like, we have to pick this up here because it was easier for them just to buy it and take it back. And I mean, you know, we'd brought quite a bit of bullets. We could only sell bullets at trade shows. But I mean, these guys are buying five boxes a piece, you know, to load up because they're like, this is the only thing that I will shoot.
Yep. Yeah. The cool thing there is if guys come into the booth, they're a little bit unsure. They're like, oh, I don't know, this 375 expanding on a Cape Buffalo. I don't know. And you try to tell them like, yeah, this is the bullet. It's so easy. Just tell them, you can go talk to the guy across the booth, the guy over there, any PH here. He's going to know who Barnes is, and they're going to recommend him. And it's so easy just to tell them that. And then they come back like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm going to buy some. Everyone said really good things. And so it's in Africa, Barnes is renowned. There is one of the number one brands over there.
Absolutely. All right. So I know we were going to talk about Harvest, but I do want to talk about Pioneer instead.
Okay.
Let's jump into Pioneer. I know that we've kind of hinted at it, but let's talk about why it was developed and kind of the offerings that you have there and why you would use it over potentially, you know, regular Vortex.
Yeah, so really Barnes Pioneer, we do offer the Barnes Original and the TSX or XPBs if it's a pistol for revolver. But really, I like to focus on the original. The TSX offerings in Pioneer, just they're basically the Vortex offerings, right? It's just to be able to have the TSX solid or the XPB to go along with the original. But really the line was developed around the original. And the reason being is especially in lever gun and revolver, it allows us to go heavy for caliber.
Yep.
With that lead core bullet that we're not going to be able to get to with a copper projectile.
Yep.
But one thing that's unique with these originals for Pioneer, these are what I like to call kind of unofficially new originals.
Right.
These were new projectiles that were built for these offerings. These weren't just where we pulled bullets out of our catalog and said, throw it in there. So we developed a new 400 grain original for the 4570. You know, we built 190 grain for the 3030, which is awesome.
Yep.
You know, you talk about like a woods gun 3030. If guy wants to hunt mm-hmm. elk or bear, that 190 is awesome. You know, good sectional density, good penetration. These are thicker jackets. You know, they do expand. These are expanding bullets.
Right.
But they're not just going to flatten out, pancake, come apart. You know, we made sure we had good weight retention, good penetration. We do a really cool 180 grain for the 357 mag, which is an awesome load. Kagan in the lab, he used it out of a lever gun, one of those Marlin 1894 dark models, kind of the modern tactical lever gun with a suppressor and a scope. But he killed a whitetail with that at like 150 yards with that. That's 180 cool. grain. Pretty awesome. We do 45 Colt, 250 grain, 300 grain in a 44 mag.
Yeah.
And this stuff's legit. Like if you're a heavy handgun guy, kind of those big bore revolver guys, really cool loads, good velocities. You know, we really focused on getting good performance.
Right.
And a bullet that's going to hold up when it hits at those higher velocities.
Yeah.
And like we said, we put a lot of development into selecting the right propellants and the right loads that's going to get good velocity out of whether it's a 6-inch revolver or an 18-inch carbine. But some of these, they're like, for example, the 44 mag 300 grain with that original, it's a stout load.
Yeah.
It's legit. It's not for the, if you're kind of a limp wrister over here, and you're not a big revolver guy, but it's, you want that performance. There's some cool options in the Pioneer line.
Yeah.
One of the most difficult parts about the developing these new originals was making it work in a carbine length lever gun, say 18 inch. I'll take the 357, 180 grain, for example, making that work in an 18 inch carbine and then also making the bullet work in a 6-inch revolver. Right. I mean, that's a huge velocity window. And if you want to make it expand and mushroom out of a little 6-inch barrel at a low velocity, how do you make it retain weight at a rifle velocity? So we did a ton of R&D work testing the highs and lows and making sure, you know, you had expansion on the low end and then some controlled expansion and weight retention on the high end. So that was all thought through, measuring velocity as we did it, posting it on the box, and it's really optimized for that for those cartridges where you can shoot revolvers and carbine length.
And that's, I'm glad you brought that up because you're absolutely right. They will hold together and retain weight. They're not just going to flatten and pancake and completely blow apart at the high velocity out of the carbines. But we still do get some expansion out of the revolvers. Like I said, even that 357, we've even shot out 4-inch guns. It's not huge expansion, but it will still expand. Which on those, you're generally wanting some penetration anyway. Right. It's kind of what you're after.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed. You know, I did that bison hunt in January with it and shot a 4570 with the 400 grain and absolutely crushed that thing. If the guys haven't watched that, or if people listening haven't watched that, right, we have that video up on our YouTube channel. Really cool Pioneer story with the bison. So
how was the recoil on that?
I mean, I think it was manageable, right? I mean, it was a pretty short gun. It was one of those Marlin 1895s, I think it is. But overall, I thought it was...
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, you don't go out and shoot for fun, you know, 100 rounds a weekend with that gun, but...
I mean, I'd put probably, like, practicing with it and getting comfortable with it. I mean, because I hadn't killed something with a lever gun since my first 10 whitetails with that 30-30 that I talked about earlier, right? Like, so it was fun to kind of get back into the old school ways of shooting a lever gun and taking it. But I mean, that was probably, I'd probably shot a 4570 a few times, but all in all, I mean, I felt like it was a manageable recoil, both shooting off the bench, both shooting it, you know, just offhand as well as like on sticks. And I ended up shooting, you know, that bison off sticks at 130 yards or something. And I mean, talk about penetration, like I ended up shooting him multiple times just to put him down as quickly as possible, even though that, you know, the first two shots were essentially through the heart. and never found a bullet, right? Just completely blow through a big bison bull. So,
yeah.
All right. I think we did it, guys.
I think we covered it.
Well, I appreciate you guys' time this morning. Let's wrap this thing up and get into our new product meeting. So maybe you guys will be excited about that if they listen this far.
Yeah.
So we've got some cool things coming down the line that maybe we can talk about here soon.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks, guys.